Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Gentle Parents Unite weekly podcast with Sujai Johnson and Vivek Patel. We're really happy to be here with you. We love sharing ideas and concepts and strategies to help you with your parenting, creating deeper and more harmonious relationships with your kids. We've both been working with parents for many, many years, and we love bringing our experience and our love for this work to you. So please grab a cup of tea and a paper and pen to make some notes. Sit back and relax with us as we share some ideas around parenting. Thank you so much. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Gentle Parents Unite podcast. So happy to be here with you. One more time, talking about parenting and conscious parenting and conscious living and conscious relationships and all that stuff. And I'm here with my wonderful and wise colleague, Sujai Johnson. Hi, Sujai. How are you today?
Hi, Vivek. I love you too, Gabriel.
I love you too, Gabriel.
Good morning. I'm doing wonderful.
So we come here every week to talk to you about gentle parenting, and we go into one or two different topics, and go into detail about those topics, about what the topic is and how it works and how you can work it in your life. And sometimes we have guests too, wonderful conscious parenting guests. And today I want to talk about defensiveness. I think that defensiveness is something that's really important in our lives as parents and as people. Because I know that when I get defensive, personally, when I get defensive, I have so much trouble communicating. I have so much trouble getting my point across. People can't hear me, and I really can't hear anyone else either. You know, that creates like the deep separation. And then I don't get my needs met, you know. And so my own defensiveness works against me. The thing is, the word defensiveness comes from the word defend. And when we were young, we were literally defending ourselves from the coercive patterns and any danger or stress, trauma and abuse that we were experiencing when we were young. And a lot of the things that we did, we had to do for survival. And so what happens is when we're in a similar kind of situation, not the same situation, obviously because we were kids then, but when we're in a similar kind of situation where we feel attacked or we feel judged or we feel wrong or we feel that coercion come on, then those old patterns get activated. And they're old, but they're really old patterns, and they're really deep too because they were imposed on us, or they were developed during our formative years, imposed on us by our environment and our response to the environment. And so as adults, when we get defensive, it literally can feel like life or death sometimes. Because, you know, when we were kids, it might have been. Your survival was dependent on not being ejected from the community. And so the family community in this case. And so we ended up having to find defensive strategies. And so when we're kids, there's three different main responses that kids have to coercion and control. And that is resistance, compliance, and distance. And resistance is where they push back aggressively, and compliance is where they give up their own will and they just do whatever they're told, but not because they're really caring or thinking about it or engaged consciously, but just because they don't want to, you know, out of fear. And then distance is when they withdraw from the relationship and they draw from the family community. And resistance, distance can come with resistance and compliance, and all three of those things are a mess because none of them are really genuine human relationship. None of them are a genuine relationship with ourselves and knowing what we want and what's good for us and making intelligent decisions based on that. None of them are tuning in deeply to the other people in our community and our family and caring about their experience. So resistance, compliance, and distance, none of those things are really effective for cooperation, for emotional processing, and for building a deep relationship. And they actually create defensiveness. And then when we're adults and we have these resistance, compliance, and distance patterns inside of us, and all the different ways that they play out, when we're adults, we project those onto our adult relationships, even if they're not necessary. And we could just talk and figure things out. But then you got two inner children protecting themselves and defending themselves. There's no real communication happening. There's no real connection happening. There's no real understanding happening. And sometimes the patterns that we had as kids, we will manifest the opposite when we're older and we're free. For example, I was always a very meek child. And then as I started to find my freedom, I started to say no more. And then as I started to find more freedom, I became really aggressive in my youth, in my teen years, in my early 20s. And so I went from this very soft, meek, gentle boy to a much, much more aggressive person. But it was coming from the same seed inside. And my defensiveness, when I get defensive, it's a similar thing. When I get defensive, it's my young self feeling attacked and needing to defend itself. Defensiveness, right? It needs to defend itself. And so for me, what I find is recognizing that defensiveness doesn't help me. Recognizing that defensiveness actually causes me harm. And this is one thing, right? Is that recognition takes some work. And that's because our defensiveness feels like defending. We feel like we're just defending ourselves. I'm not defensive. How often do you call someone defensive? I'm not defensive. I mean, I've even said that. And it's like a classic joke. It's like someone going, I'm not angry, you know? And I love I'm not defensive. It's the best word. When someone calls me defensive, I usually say, I might be feeling defensive right now. You're right. Why do you say that? What makes you say so? That's because I know that when I am defensive, it works against me. It works against me. I don't get what I want. I don't get the peace that I want. I don't get seen. I don't get belonging. I don't get people seeing my needs and helping me with them. I don't get intimate communication and connection with people. I don't get all of this stuff. And this is what I want. You know, I want that validation. I want the empathy. I want the connection. I want those things in my relationships. And defensiveness pushes those things away. So one of the important aspects of dealing with our own defensiveness is when we feel it, when we feel that sense of being attacked and we want to defend ourselves, recognizing that what's happening is, this isn't always obviously, but what's happening is that we are seeking that connection, that empathy from our external environment because we didn't get it when we were kids and we spend our lives trying to fill that hole from the external. So once we realize that that's what's happening, we can stop trying to get that fulfilled from the other person. We can invoke the adult self, the conscious adult self inside of ourselves, the adult that understands how the mind works, that is able to offer empathy to ourselves. The child can't really do that because the child is wounded and trying to survive and has all of these reactions. But you also have a conscious adult self, one that is in touch with their understanding, with their deep sense of love and connection, one that's able to look past the behavior and the circumstances and make conscious choices. And then when you can invoke your conscious adult self, then you can offer the hurting self validation and empathy that you're trying to get from the defensiveness, that you're trying to get from the outside. And that process is so powerful. I recently went through a situation that I got really defensive in my life, really, really defensive. And I am 51, so I've been through enough of those kind of things to know not to respond when I'm feeling that way. And I'm the guy who's written novels defending myself from that defensive place, novels. You know, pages and pages, but this and that, and you didn't take this into account, and you don't understand that, and what I really meant was this, and you worded it that way, and you put words in your mouth, and I said this, and why would you say this, and why would you do that, and I would just go on and on and on. So I'm really good at the defensiveness, and I understand the feeling of it, which is why I can talk about it, honestly. So when I get defensive, now I recognize that if I respond from that place, I'm going to lose everything. And honestly, I did, in this one instance, I did start to respond and then I backed off and I recognized that if I kept going, it's just going to go downhill. So I stopped. But the defensiveness didn't end. So I had to work through the defensiveness. You know, it's either repress it or work through it. If I repress it, it's still going to come out in my words. It's still going to come out in my tone. It's still going to come out in other areas of my life. And I'm not actually healing. You know, Sujaya, you often talk about how what the world really needs right now is deep, deep generational healing. And I can feel that in my own defensiveness, you know, I can feel that in my own experience. And, mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, when I allow myself to do some of that healing and to recognize my defensiveness is an indication of a need for that kind of healing, it really shifts my my relationship to it. And then that's what I did, right? You helped me with that too. You said, Vivek, just calm down. And so I took you really helped me. You said, think about your values. Think about what you teach and what you consider important in life and consider important in relationships. And you talked me off the ledge and I calmed down and I took breaths and I realized that I want to approach things in a vulnerable, authentic, loving way, which defensiveness specifically makes us avoid, because those things are, while they're actually more powerful, they feel dangerous because of how we were raised. That when I was vulnerable, when I was raised, I didn't get support for it. I got beat down for it. Inside the home and outside. So I had to give that to myself as an adult.
Absolutely. And you know, one thing that I want to acknowledge about defensiveness is that defensiveness is a feeling, and feelings are all part of this really primal system that we have that allows our brain to let us know if we're safe or if we're in danger, if we're comfortable, if we're uncomfortable. And the system is really an important system that we have. And on a very primal level, humans are pack animals. And so we live together in groups for a lot of reasons. You know, basic human survival is one of the primary reasons that we live in groups. We also have other basic human needs that are met through living in groups, such as, you know, the needs for connection and touch and all of those things that we have proven actually through science are basic human needs, is that need to be that togetherness with people and to be able to have those deep human connections. It's part of who we are on a very, very biological and primal level. And when we make a mistake that feels like it's a mistake that's going to lead to rejection, that feeling of rejection is a really big feeling for really good reasons, because on a primal level, if we were living, you know, in a more hunter-gather type of a society, being expelled from that community, it could mean death. And, you know, there's a lot of other things that come along with being expelled from a community that are equally painful. You know, it's like a long, slow process of what it would be like to live in exile. And so the defensiveness comes in to protect ourselves from that rejection. So it's part of an actual system. You know, we don't want to be rejected from the community. And so we're defending our stance. We're defending our good personness. And this is all coming from a very deep primal level of feelings. And so this process of sitting with our emotions that we go through, when we're feeling rejected, we're feeling very much like we're and defensive, then we feel like we're very much in a dangerous place. And so we're responding to those very, unless we've consciously brought it into our minds and we're making conscious steps to change it, like you were talking about, Vivek, then we're oftentimes responding to that internal programming that's so biological.
Yes, thank you, Sujai. I you know what I like to say is that you can feel the feeling. Oh no, what is it? You can feel the feeling, but it doesn't mean you have to operate from it. And I think that's kind of what you're pointing to, is that the feelings have information for us. The feelings have a purpose, so we don't want to judge the feelings, you know. And it's similar to people saying that they feel shame and then they feel shame for feeling shame. We don't want to judge ourselves for having feelings. At the same time, we can learn to work with our feelings. And I think that's one of the real powerful things that humans have the capacity for. Not every human does it, but we all have the capacity for working consciously towards having a deeper relationship with our emotions. And the more that we do that work, the more we have the capacity to do that. So that when we feel something like defensiveness come up in us, we can say, ah, here's something for me to learn. Here's something for me to pay attention to. But I can still take that breath, take a step back, maybe I jump in and I react first, but then I can notice myself and I can take a step back. And I think at that point, then I can choose consciously. And again, that's one of the things about being human, I think, is so powerful, is we can have instincts, we can have urges, we can have impulses, we can have desires, and we can still choose something different. You know, maybe there are animals that can do that too. And I think there are some that can do that. For the most part, however, when an animal has an instinct, it acts on the instinct. It doesn't stop and go, I wonder if this is in alignment with my values and my principles and the priorities I've set and the kind of relationships that I want. And maybe they do. Maybe I'm completely wrong by that, but that's my experience. and so for me, martial arts training is a great example of that. You know, I've been a martial artist for 30 years. If you surprise throw a punch at somebody, usually they recoil and turn away, and it's a very instinctive thing. And the instinctive reactions we have to that, while they may save our lives from a single attack, someone actually trying to hurt you is a really bad thing. The way most people react, you don't want to turn your back. You don't want to expose vital targets. You want to keep your hands up. You want to be able to see what's happening. You want to be backing away in a way that you're aware of your surroundings. You want to, whatever, but you don't want to just like turn away and cower. But that's the instinct. And to overcome that instinct requires a lot of training, but we can do it. And I think it's similar with our mental emotional world, that that we don't want to ignore the signals, but we also want to be able to work with them.
We do find that we have quite a bit more control over those emotions than we think. Simply by evaluating the thing that we're feeling about and why we're feeling those feelings, we can shift emotions. And sometimes we feel more strongly and passionate around an emotion. You know, shifting an emotion isn't so much about letting go of something and just deciding that nothing matters. Sometimes we find that things matter to us even a whole lot more when we dig a little deeper. We can shift a feeling in the moment, but it takes kind of understanding our feelings a little bit better to get there. In the beginning, it's kind of a process finding out where we sit with those feelings and whether we want to double down on the feeling or let go of the feelings around the feeling.
Yeah, the feelings around the feeling. That's really good too, because feelings are multidimensional. I mean, it's never just one feeling happening and then another feeling happening. But one feeling sets up another feeling, and suddenly you have two feelings, and sometimes we can have contradictory feelings. And to be able to have all of this rumbling around and not be aware of it and just kind of be buffeted by it wherever it happens to go, we don't have a lot of influence in our lives. We don't have a lot of choice. And for me, choice is one of the most powerful things, you know, and I think that's one of the things about defensiveness and why I work to not let defensiveness control me, is because it reduces my choice, and that doesn't make me happy. That's not how I want to live. One of the things that's really helped me with working through my defensiveness is learning to be okay that there are some places that I'm not going to be seen and understood. Some people aren't going to understand me. Some people aren't going to accept me. Some people are going to think I'm a terrible person. Some people are going to think the stuff I teach is nonsense. I was reading a post today that somebody posted in a different parenting group, and someone tagged me. It said, "Oh, I read something by some Vivek guy who was talking about how to deal with your kids with money, and he said that if you have the money, you should buy whatever you want for your kids, whatever they want, and you shouldn't say no just because you don't think they should have it." And my whole thing around money is to create a collaborative relationship with your kids, and not authoritative, and not just tell them what to do, but to do it collaboratively. But that's with everything. And so, but this person was like going on, and then someone else said, "Oh, I saw some of Vic's stuff, and I think he's ridiculous." And I was like, I read that. This just happened this morning, and I read that thread, and I immediately felt all my defensiveness come up. And I already was planning to do this talk on defensiveness today because I had been through a bigger defensiveness experience recently. And when I saw this post, and I have to tag you in it, Sujai, so you can see it. when I saw this post come up, I was laughing. I was watching this defensiveness. I wanted to jump in there and defend it and say, no, you didn't understand what I was trying to explain. And how can you say that? And of course, they're not just saying, I don't agree with his ideas. They're saying this guy's ridiculous. He's just some dad who thinks he did a good job. He's not actually a parent, educator, and he's certainly no expert. I don't call myself an expert, but I'm just saying what it was said there. And it was going on and on. And I can't tell you, the timing was so perfect. I'm even realizing now how perfect that timing is, because I just came through a defensive thing and then I was coming to do this talk. And so what I did was, I did exactly, I took a breath. I reminded myself that hundreds and hundreds of people are helped by what I teach, maybe even more. Well, daily people reach out to me saying that their lives are changed because of the parenting stuff that I share. And that this stuff really does have a profound effect on people. So I gave myself a little bit of validation and empathy, because why not practice what I preach, right? I preach doing that. So I gave it to myself, gave myself some of that love. And then the person who said that, I just liked their comment. I didn't respond. But I am going to respond. At some point, but not from a defensive place. And that's the key for me. The key for me is, if I'm not responding from a defensive place, then even if that other person's not seeing me, I have a better chance of being able to see them. Even if that person isn't understanding me, I have a better chance of understanding them. And even if they're not giving me validation and empathy, if I'm not defensive, I have a better chance of giving it to myself, which hopefully has a better chance of giving it to them. And everything works out better then. Even if I choose to disengage, even if I choose to set a harsh boundary, don't talk to me anymore, regardless, I shouldn't say that's a harsh boundary, it's a reasonable boundary sometimes. But whatever it is, if I'm doing it from a non-defensive place, being non-defensive doesn't mean you always have to engage with the other person that you're releasing your defensiveness around. It means you're releasing the power they have over you, the power you're giving them through your own defensiveness, right? The giving up our own power, giving up our own center, giving up our own sense of choice and autonomy. Which is why, one of the biggest things that helps us with that is a meditation practice. There's actually three different main practices that help with defensiveness. And one is meditation, another is self-observation, and another is self-compassion. And to have a practice in all three of those, I think, is really helpful. One of the things that I have developed that I share with parents, and I share with them largely in the paid membership parenting support space that you and I host, Sujai, that I would love to invite everybody to come over and join us there. We're recently joined a new membership company called Podia that we love, and we're going to be creating a whole bunch of courses and offering courses and different support options online. And if you go to gentleparentsunite.podia.com, that's Podia, you can find us there. And one of the things that I teach there, and also in my articles and videos, is about three micro practices. And those micro practices, I call them micro practices because they just take one moment, of time. So a micro meditation is a one breath meditation. A micro self-observation is where you observe yourself just for a moment, not continuously all throughout the day as like some major practice, but just for a moment, you observe yourself. Like, I'm sitting here recording this podcast, and just for a moment, as I'm talking, I'm going to imagine I'm outside my body and I'm watching myself sitting here talking. And so I'm saying these words and I'm watching myself say the words. That's self-observation. And then the third one is self-compassion. It's being kind to myself, saying kind things to myself, like I said earlier, saying validating things to myself. And we do meditations on all of these in our group. And the people who are really practicing them, it's really changing their relationship with themselves. They're more conscious. They're more aware. They notice their feelings earlier before they have a chance to like really take hold and control their behavior. And then they can make deeper choices. So if you can try practicing meditation, self-observation, and self-compassion, being kind to yourself, being able to notice yourself and see yourself, and being able to have some kind of relationship with your mind, which is what meditation is really about, then it can really, really help you when you're dealing with moments when your inner child wants to feels it needs to defend itself, which is a nicer way of saying when you get defensive, right? Your inner child feels it needs to defend itself. You can put the brakes on, give that little one a hug, and say, "I understand you. I understand you. You belong with me. I care about you. I'm here for you." Say that to yourself. It's so beautiful to say that to yourself. And then your whole system calms down when you say that to yourself. And then at that point, you can look at the situation and say, what's the best way for me to engage in this? Because our kids make us defensive too, you know? And so when we operate, if you've got a four-year-old and you get defensive, suddenly you've got 2 4-year-olds, one in an adult body and one in a 4-year-old body. So that's not helping anyone. So like I said before, invoke the conscious adult mindset, the conscious adult you, and let that loving, powerful adult hold space for your pain and your child's pain, and release that defensiveness, and then just think what's appropriate for you in this moment. And I think that can make a big difference. If you work on that kind of mindset, it can have a huge effect. And that's all I wanted to say about defensiveness today. Sujai, did you want to add anything else about defensiveness?
I think that we can manage defensiveness in different ways depending on, you know, what's going on externally that's triggered this kind of defensiveness. I think that a micro self-observation is an amazing tool, and putting in all of the forework to try and avoid getting triggered in the first place are all really great tools. And during this time right now, I just want to take a minute to acknowledge that things are really intense out there. You know, 7, 8 months into quarantine and all of the civil unrest and all of the uncertainties and the financial insecurities that come along with this time. People are on edge. People are at the peak limit of what they can handle. You know, a lot of people are feeling really, really stressed out. And so, particularly in an online environment where we have the luxury to respond more slowly, we have the choice to take a deep breath where, you know, we always have the choice to take a deep breath and take a step back. Though in person, it can feel a lot more intense. But particularly in the online world, you know, learning how to take a breath before responding, maybe setting some guidelines for ourselves about the ways that we want to engage with somebody, particularly, you know, in writing, so that we can have like a guideline or a limit for ourselves that we know how we're going to go into these kinds of things. You know, for myself, I'll just be a little bit more clear and less abstract. I think it's really helpful. For myself, this means guidelines for commenting on Facebook or other social media that I have in place for myself. You know, make sure that I'm fully awake. Don't go in commenting, you know, before I've had my cup of coffee in the morning, before I've really opened my eyes all the way. If I see something that's upsetting, I remind myself to read it 2 or 3 times before going in. You know, a lot of times there's this thing, you know, they say pick your battles and then pick a few less and then put some back, put a few more back. And, you know, with commenting on social media, some stuff maybe we want to get in there and really battle about and really make a change on. But I think it's really important to pick which ones we're going to expend the energy and the time and the possible arguing and putting ourselves out there on, and choosing those really wisely. And, you know, deciding to scroll past, and that I'm not saying scroll past things that, you know, you find fundamentally harmful, you know, pick your battles. and scroll past more than you might usually, especially if you're feeling on edge. And then, you know, before you hit send, sometimes too, if you type up a really angry comment, that feels really good. And you might have needed to get all of that stuff off of your chest. But before you hit send on that comment, read it again. And then read it again. And then maybe read it from, you know, trying to remove yourself and putting yourself in a third person perspective and see how, you know, other people might also be receiving that and how other people might be seeing it. And then slow yourself down a whole bunch on social media. Stay informed, but maybe even cut back some on social media in these hard times when everybody's triggered and we're so politically charged and there's so many different varying thoughts, ideas, conspiracy theories, pressure, stresses, you know, just a gazillion things. It's really at a climax. And so, you know, staying informed of what's going on is really important. And at the same time, we don't need to overdose and overload and make everything, you know, our cause or our battle. And in those moments, just remembering to take those deep breaths before hitting send and, you know, rewrite your comments, delete them before you send them. And remember, when we're feeling upset, when we're feeling on edge, when we're feeling like everything's pressing down around us, we've got financial struggles, we're really scared about what happens next, we don't know what the future looks like for our children, you know, the entire world is experiencing a lot of those same feelings right alongside us. And in that moment, if we can lean into empathy, if we can lean into going, wow, you know, this person is rude, they're short, I don't like their ideas, I have all of these things that I want to say about them or that I want to feel about them, or I'm just having a bad day and I don't like their ideas and I'm going to vent them over here, or whatever it is that's kind of motivating your hard time. To lean into that empathy and to remember that that person over there on the other side, that person over there on the other side is a human being who may be going through a lot of things that are very similar to, maybe more intense or less intense, or maybe just a little bit different than the things that you're going through right now, because a lot of what people are going through is very universal with COVID and, you know, the responses being pretty, you know, everything that the world is collectively going through right now leads to and allows a lot of room for that stress and pressure. And so when you're ready to vent your angers onto somebody else, just take a deep breath and lean into that empathy and remember that that's another person over there who's going through something very similar to you, and hold loving space and empathy for that person as much as possible so that you can, you know, either, and if somebody, you know, if we have different choices too, if we terribly, deeply, fundamentally are in disagreement with somebody's viewpoints and they seem pretty set in that viewpoint, you know, there's not a lot of need to argue about it, but we may need a boundary around, you know, not, if it was in person, not talking about that topic with the person all the time. And if it's on the news feed, you know, maybe either hitting snooze or hide on somebody, or unfriending them, or finding a way to kind of reclaim your space so that you're not feeling triggered by that person's thoughts and ideas constantly and wanting to constantly engage in, you know, the things that they're saying that you find upsetting. And so those are all some tools that I think that folk can really lean into during this difficult time in order to have more compassion for themselves and have more compassion for others, and to be really careful in how they're carrying themselves and to not be projecting all of that pain and hardship onto others. And, you know, those tools for like picking your battles and putting some back, and for just pausing a second before you hit send, and all of that stuff, that can be done internally in person too. You know, we can take a deep breath before we decide to tell somebody to, you know, whether it's, you know, we tell somebody to fuck off or we slam something down and stomp out of the room, you know, we have a choice to rethink that simply by taking a breath and taking a step back and rethinking our thought pattern and maybe leaning into some more of that empathy and validation and trying to find a more mutual middle ground with folk and holding ourselves accountable so that when we're carrying ourselves, we can feel within ourselves that our reality aligns with our philosophy and our ideals as much as possible. And sometimes we're going to fall short of that mark. So when we do, let's just hold lots of empathy and grace for ourselves and then move through it forward in ways where we're, you know, doing the healing processes, we're doing the reflecting, we're finding ways to do better next time, we're leaning into, you know, taking those pauses, we're leaning into clearing our lives from that extra pressure of things that we really can't manage dealing with on top of everything else that we're managing dealing with, and finding those tools so that we can hold ourselves accountable for ourselves. And hopefully during this painful time, we don't end up projecting our pain onto others and perpetuating the cycles of pain.
Yeah, Sujai, I'm with you, my friend. And I think that, you know, like you said, in this time, the more conscious we can be of how we are engaging in the world, the better off we're all going to be. And certainly with our kids also. Mm-hmm. And I think that we all can play a part. You know, we can all play a part in how the world moves forward and the shape of it. And I think that's why conscious parenting is so important, because we are shaping the minds of the future. We are shaping the hearts of the future. We're shaping the, you know, the way people think relationships should be and humans should be treated. We're shaping those things into the future as we offer our kids our model and our guidance and our love. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of the most profound, challenging, and enriching opportunities that we have as human beings.
I agree. It truly is. And holding space for the younger generation with a lot of kindness and respect and love, because I'll tell you what, this, you know, I think young people have always been, they're so blossoming and full of life and full of justice. And I think that that's, you know, part of our conditioning is conditioning all of that spark out of us. Mm-hmm. And during this time of extreme difficulty, I am very much impressed with the way that I see the young people raising to the situation and managing themselves. It's really a beautiful thing to witness.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, I think it's amazing.
So I don't have too much more to say on the topic of defensiveness. You know, it's one of those things where we're going to get that feeling. And when we get that feeling, we're probably going to be pretty triggered. We're in that fight or flight space.
Yeah.
And it's hard to take a second and respond more calmly once our brains get into that triggered place. And, you know, our reasoning is literally getting, you know, sucked up and shrinking inside the amygdala as it expands around that reasoning part of your brain. And it is a little bit harder to reason in that moment of being triggered. And so have a lot of compassion for yourselves. Love yourselves. Lean into your daily self-cares, particularly as parents. I know it's really hard for us to meet our basic needs, like taking showers every day and, you know, our hygiene needs and our eating needs and making sure we're getting water. A lot of that stuff as parents we put off. Making sure that we're internally as balanced as possible on the day-to-day. You know, we're not always going to be 100% balanced, but checking our little boxes, our A, Bs, and Cs of trying to be at the best we can be through a difficult situation. And leaning into those tools. And there's one last thing that I did want to offer as a tool is, you know, those physical tools when we're triggered are so helpful. So, you know, if you're feeling triggered in person or online, If you're feeling like you're really in that, you know, fight or flight space and you're completely defensive or you're really angry or you just want to lash out at somebody, physical release for those emotions is amazing. And it doesn't have to be violent physical release. Yay. I'm not into violent physical release myself. So, you know, I'm sure I've felt on, that's a whole nother story. But what I'm talking about is things like jumping up and stepping outside and breathing in the fresh air, turning on the music and busting out a dance move, jumping up and making a joke, grab that broom and sweep the floor really fast, or whatever it is that you can feel. Even jumping jacks, they're great. Jumping jacks are such a healthy way to get those heavy tensions out. But whatever it is that you can physically, like, you want to feel that tension because the tension is building physically within your body. And so you physically want to feel it release the same way you would physically feel it release if you yelled at somebody, if you told somebody to fuck off. You know, when it comes out at that point, it feels pretty good because you're blowing off that steam. So you want to physically do something that gives an outlet to that feeling in the same way without the intense, violent, or heavy, or so-called negative impact, right? So that would be, you know, like I'm saying, like a jumping jack or a dance move or a joke or something. And when you do it, like, move your body with it, really, like, so that you give that release. And those physical tools, they're really, really some of the best. Like breathing and meditations and all of that, they can be a little bit harder to lean into in that moment when we're feeling those tensions rise. And they're really great preventative, and they are very helpful in the moment for some people. And then there's this other aspect of the physical release that's needed. So if that's you, then lean into those and find ways to release that physical without it being a violent and an aggressive type of a thing.
Yeah, the body and the mind are so so connected. So that makes perfect sense.
Yes. And if you, for those of you who listen to my work, you know I talk a lot about where emotions manifest physically in our bodies and the pressure pot building of them. And so that physical release is kind of a secondary on that teaching, which you can find me talking about it in season 1, episode 2. And then whole bunches of little pieces of small works shared all over anywhere where I share my works.
Yeah, thank you, Sujai. This has been great. I really enjoyed talking to you. We're just getting rolling on season 5, and we are going to be having some guests soon, although we don't have anyone. We haven't decided who to ask yet. But we are going to be having some guests soon, and I'm looking forward to that. And we'd love everybody to come join us on our social media spaces. Our big public parenting group is Gentle Parents Unite, and you can just type that in on Facebook and you can find us. We have close to 60,000 members now. Our paid membership site, where Sujai and I host, I like the way that sounds, Sujai and I, where Sujai and I host, we host a very, very intimate and very personal parenting support space where we do coaching calls, meditations, and live classes and courses and all sorts of things like that. And that's at gentleparentsunite.podia.com. And we'd love to see you over there as well to get to know you and help you along your parenting journey. And I think that's it. Thank you, Sujai, for a wonderful conversation.
Thank you, Vivek. I really love the way that, you know, we were able to bring so many enhancing tools to this topic that, you know, people can really, they've got a lot of stuff to kind of pick apart and find out the tools that work best for them in those situations where they're feeling those big feelings come up and having a hard time finding the proper, or not proper, but, you know, finding the outlet for them that aligns best with how they want to carry themselves.
For sure. All right. Thank you very much, everybody. And we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'd love for you to find us on social media. You can find our big parenting group, Gentle Parents Unite, on Facebook. And we also have a public page, also called Gentle Parents Unite. Our membership site, where we do more personal, intimate parenting support services and coaching and meditations and different things that we have, all geared towards really supporting parents in a really intense and personal way. You can just type in gentleparentsunite.com and you can find us there. Vivek's articles and videos can be found at Meaningful Ideas. Over 60 videos, and between my blog and my Facebook page, about 500 articles. And we wish you all the best, and we'll see you next week. Thank you so much.